Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to episode number 306 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is February 3rd, 2014, just 2 quick days away from National Signing Day. So we're going to talk some recruiting a little bit later on the show with Chris Swanson. It'll be his first time on the podcast. We'll get some USC recruiting from him. We're actually going to do a premium USC recruiting podcast on Tuesday as well, right before signing day. And we've got Dan Weber joining us in the first segment, talking about the Super Bowl, talking about the new Heritage Hall, questions on the team. So we're going to get to all of those topics today. If you have any questions or comments, podcast at uscfootball.com is our email address, or you can call us at 206-888-6755 or go to our website, peristylepodcast.com. Leave a voicemail right on the left side of the page. All right, well, I want to bring in Dan. Dan Weber, uscfootball.com beat writer. What's going on, Dan? How you doing?
Pretty good. Good weekend for USC, I think, on balance. A really good weekend, actually, for opening Heritage Hall and then getting to see what happened in the Super Bowl. And he had to make, USC fans feel pretty good knowing that, hey, that I've seen that game before. and they had, actually. And Pete was right. He was going to be able to do it again at the NFL level. And he's figured out a different way to do it. I know I did have a conversation one day one-on-one with him about why would you give up college where you've got such an advantage recruiting because of your own competitive nature, your own personality in USC, and all of that gives you. Why would you give that up? And he's figured out a way to do kind of the same thing. I think there are only 4 players left on that roster when he took over the Seahawks, and I know – in the first year, they brought in 284 different guys that they cycled through the roster to see who could help them out. And he finds guys like Malcolm Smith, who seventh round pick and guy he knew really well, but that not a lot of people thought could play big time football and be a cinch player. And he made it work, and he made it work with a lot of guys. With a guy like from Stanford, Sherman, who played, wide receiver, played against USC, and now he's, the best corner in the game playing for PC. So but he said he could do it, and he went ahead and did it.
He certainly did. And we had a bunch of questions about the Super Bowl, Dan, just because, the USC ties and seeing people talk about seeing Marcus Allen delivering the trophy, with Smith getting the MVP and, of course, Pete winning. So there's a lot of interest there from USC fans that have become Seattle Seahawks fans. But I want to play you this voicemail question first and let you answer this one. Here you go.
Hey, guys. Rob and Yakaya. Just wanted to make a comment about the Super Bowl. Congratulations to the Seahawks. They played a hell of a game. Congratulations to Pete for the Super Bowl victory. I just want to make a comment and say that that game played out eerily similar to when USC and Oklahoma played in the national championship game back in 2005. I just couldn't help but notice the similarities, and it's so ironic that the same coach, coaching USC, it looked like USC when Pete was coaching USC in that season. Anyway, just thought I'd mention that. If you guys want to talk about that, that'd be great. Anyway, take care. Love the podcast. Bye.
Yeah, I was kind of struck between whether it more looked like the USC-Oklahoma game or the year before when USC, with a young team, but very athletic and very defensive-minded, went to Auburn and played an Auburn team that had, a whole boatload of guys go to the NFL. And really talented Auburn team, picked by some people. I think Sporting News had him number one in the nation. And I still remember Tommy Tuberville talking about, when he didn't know he was talking to a reporter, but talking about how he couldn't get his team in August practice, there was nothing he could do to get his team up to be able to play at the speed that USC defense was going to play. And I kept thinking about that yesterday, that it just didn't look like there was anything Denver could do to get up to the speed that Seattle was defending them at. And that was vintage USC. I mean, they were playing the receivers differently. They weren't, this wasn't, you know, bend, don't break. They were going to break you and bend you and do whatever else, you know, they had to do with the, Pete's got a new theory about the secondary, obviously. But those two games kind of were rattling around in your brain as far as remembering vintage, you know, Pete Carroll. And the one thing you do remember with Pete was his teams almost always showed up to play in the biggest of games. And, you know, the one they lost, the Texas game, they basically were down to, you know, some third stringers on defense. They really ran out of defense, and they got careless and got cocky. But USC under Pete, and I guess, what are they, 7-1, 6-1 BCS games? That was because of Pete. I mean, they basically – the thing that you found that was so interesting at the end of the year, when they were getting ready for a bowl game, by the time they got there, they were a better team after whatever time off, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, than they were in the last game they'd played. And that happened with Seattle. That was a better Seattle team after the 2 weeks to get ready for it than anybody had seen all year. And that's really hard to be ready for a team that's going to play better than you've seen them play all year. And it certainly looked like it threw Denver off. And how Pete has the ability to do that, it's just something special that his players kind of get a momentum and they believe. And that's what we saw in bowl preparation, how they got better and better. And, yeah, that's something special. You know, most teams just try to hold on during the period of time you've got to get ready, you know, for the big game. Pete's team's always got better.
They certainly did. And we got a couple written questions, too, kind of about this. This one ties into signing day. Dan, it's Earl in West L.A. wants to know, could this have happened at a better time? 3 days before National Signing Day, a seventh-round draft pick from USC wins the Super Bowl MVP. The winning coach led USC to 2 national championships. And Lombardi Trophy was carried to the podium by USC Heisman Trophy winner Marcus Allen. What a great last-minute unofficial home visit. Didn't Malcolm Smith have a pick six against the Bruins in 2010 at the Rose Bowl as well? That's Earl in West L.A.
Yeah, and on top of that, you've got, you know, the team that USC has the most first-round draft picks, the most number one picks, and the most Pro Football Hall of Famers, and I'm sure that gets pointed out to kids as well, that, you know, that's about seven different things for kids to be thinking about when it comes down to, you know, where you're going to play your college football, and it doesn't hurt that USC doesn't have to talk about, you know, what kind of education you're going to get here, or what kind of a, you know, campus you're dealing with, or all of the kinds of things. I mean, there is a lot going for USC, and it's, you know, why Steve Sarkisian is here. This is where you can be really good, and you've got a chance to be really good, and you should be really good. There are, I mean, when you look at what's happened, and we every once in a while we'll refer to the NCAA sanctions and all that, what have you, but the unprecedented nature of what USC was hit with and the unfairness and all the other stuff about it, despite, you know, the coaching situation, USC has 2 10-win seasons in the last 3. That's impossible, almost. I mean, that's not something I think you could absolutely say no other program in the country, having had what has happened to USC happen to it, would have 2 10-win seasons in the last 3. No, it's not possible. So, you know, there are some things that are looking pretty favorable for USC at this point in time.
One last one that's Super Bowl related. This is from Marcel. He said, I heard yesterday Russell Wilson say that in practice, the ones go against the ones all the time, which makes them better. This has been one of the problems for USC with the sanctions. What we saw in the Super Bowl reminded me so much of the Pete Carroll era at USC. It was unbelievable. Practice makes the difference. I remember Reggie Bush saying he got hit harder in practice than in games.
Well, I think, and one of the things I think helped the rebirth after game five was the fact that, and I think this is where probably Ed Orgeron doesn't get maybe as much credit, that came up with the idea of the ones against the twos, not so much the ones against the scouts or the ones against the, you know, the third team and the scout team or whatever, but the twos with the guys who are really trying to be on the, you know, on the ones. And so you're going against Michael Hutchings and Quentin Powell, you know, at linebacker. You're going against Jabari Ruffin and Scott Starr. That was, you're going against athletes, and you're going against full speed where you really have to play. And I thought that was a big part of the turnaround. It allowed them to practice fast. It allowed them to practice quickly, get a lot done in a very competitive environment. And that was a, there was no question, that was a throwback to both Pete and Ed would say, this is what they did when he was, Ed was only in the NFL 1 year, but he said, this is one of the things he liked from the NFL. You didn't get your ones hurt playing against the ones, but you got them speeded up playing against athletes who really wanted to be on the ones. So, so I thought that, but I thought I heard when Russell Wilson said that, and it sounded like he said at the end of the week, the 3 days of practice at the end of the week, the ones are still going against the ones, and he said nobody else in the NFL does that. And it's obvious you have to have the right kind of players. I could see an NFL team that probably wouldn't like that, but the players that Pete has, he's got the youngest team in the NFL. I think that's all part of the plan. I'm not sure if you had his team average, 26.4 years of age. And if you had a team that averaged, say a 30-year-old average team, that might not go over as well. So I think that's where the coach and the general manager, everybody have to be on the same page so that you get the kind of players that will benefit from the way you're going to practice. You get a young quarterback like Russell Wilson, a young athletic quarterback. You get the kind of guys in the secondary, as athletic as they are. As Russell Wilson said, look at how good you have to become playing against those guys every day. And again, that sounded like what you always heard at USC with, the offense saying, we have to bring it every day. We have to go all out every day because we're playing against, Clay Matthews and Brian Cushing and Ray Maluga, and they're going to, come after us, and we better be ready to go after them.
All right, good stuff there, Dan. Well, let's switch gears a little bit, because if you look at usually on USCFootball.com, several days before signing day, it's pretty much all recruiting that's going to be going up there. But there were some big events on campus, and we actually had a ton of stories up on the new Heritage Hall. There's photos, videos, and you wrote some great columns about what's been going on there at Heritage Hall. So maybe kind of get people up to speed on what's going on with the new Heritage Hall.
Yeah, really good deal. I mean, it's easy for me to say. It's not my money, but I think they got their $35 million worth. Having that building go from 48,000 square feet of usable space to 80,000 square feet, to see all the things they've done underground with the coaches' offices and, golf simulators and giant putting greens and just a wonderful, lounge for the female athletes. And what a compliment it is to the McKay Center. So that basically gives them nearly 200,000 square feet of brand new usable space. And what it did too, it opened the patio up. Now, when you go there, it just looks bigger. I mean, they've got more stuff there, but it looks like it's expanded. The way they're using the outdoor patio with furniture and tables and place where they can get together. We've got a place back again for press conferences and Heritage, workroom for the media that is significantly upgraded, certainly upgraded space for the, sports information office. And then the central core is a Hall of Champions that basically is the only place in the country you're going to be able to touch a Heisman Trophy or six of them, because they're not covered. They're not, you know, encased in behind glass. And they made the decision that, you know, they're secure. You're not going to be able to walk off with them. But they're right there. And, you know, that's having done a traveling college football Hall of Fame for a year and having carried Archie Griffin's Heisman with me, his second one that he let us have, I can tell you what a big deal, what an iconic thing that is for people when they see, you know, the Heisman Trophy up close and they want to touch it. And I thought it was a really good, you know, decision by USC to allow that. I think really neat. And it really worthwhile, I think, for all of our USCFootball.com community to, you know, spend a day in Heritage Hall. They've got all kinds of touch screens where you can look up every athlete and videos and histories and photos and just a lot of neat stuff that I'm going to go back. Obviously, we go there, you know, all the time, but just go back. We got a tour on Friday, but we really like to, you know, be able to take time and just see everything there, you know, that's there, and we haven't done that yet. But it's going to be a great place for the Jock Rally on Friday. Great place, I think, on game day for people, you know, to gather, start your game day, you know, at Heritage Hall. It'd be just great.
Good stuff, Dan, on that. So you can check out Dan's columns and the photos and videos all on uscfootball.com. And then we got some team questions I wanted to get to, Dan. Some, you know, spring football will be coming up soon. I know signing day is just a couple days away, and we're going to talk to Chris Swanson about that in the next segment. But Andrew Hogue had a question. Do you think that all the positions will have open competition in the spring, or do you think some guys are cemented in like Nelson Aguilar?
Oh, I think as much as they talk about competition, they're also saying that spring ball is going to be kind of NFL-like practice. Because they really don't know. I mean, it's almost week to week how many are going to be back and what shape they're going to be in and all that. So I think it's going to be more an introduction to both the new offense and the new defense, kind of a practice for practicing, because they're going to go as up-tempo as they possibly can in the game, so they're going to have to do it in practice. But I don't know that they're going to get there yet until they get all the, you know, the 13 at least guys who are coming back from significant or season-ending injuries or surgeries and rehabs and what have you. I think they feel very comfortable that all of them are going to be back, you know, by the summer. But to say that they can go and really compete, I'm not sure that can happen in the spring. I just don't know that everybody's going to be at the same level. Let's just take, you know, offensive linemen. You know, at what stage, where's Zach Banner going to be? Where's Jordan Simmons going to be? Where are those guys going to be in terms of being able to really, you know, compete for that spot? Although I guess, you know, you would say a guy like Khalil Rogers is going to be able to compete in a way where he can say, you know, I'm ready to step in where? Center, maybe, or a guy like Kenny Bigelow. Where does he fit in with the new talent that's coming on in terms of the defensive line? So I think in places like that it can happen. Can it happen with Stephen Mitchell and a George Farmer? I'm not sure if it can happen yet in the spring for those guys to try to establish an absolute pecking order at wide receiver, for example. So I think we'll just – I wouldn't look for all-out open competition at every position, let's say that.
Okay.
But quarterback, you know, they could certainly – Max Brown will certainly probably get a chance to you know, make that a two-man competition, and that'll probably be good for both Cody and Max.
Yeah, that was Tark's question, too. He said, since Sark said spring practice would be more about learning the schemes and not much contact, should we assume that the quarterback race between Kessler and Max Brown won't be decided until fall camp?
Yeah, and I'm not I'm not someone that thinks that there's a big decision to make. I think the decision is, how far does Max come along, and where does that put him, and is it, you know, one of those situations where he could start also. Yeah, that's, I think that's what you want to see happen, where Max says, I'm ready to also be the starter. How that would happen in the spring, probably not possible. And it would be a long shot, as well as Cody played by the end of the year and having a year's experience. But you certainly wouldn't, you know, want to sell Max Brown. I think the thing you want with Max Brown this year is to be the kind of player that if he's starting, no big deal. Everybody feels good about it, and he's ready to go. And that's where I think you want to get him in the spring. And I think they can get him there. I think he can get himself there.
And then kind of almost a follow-up to that, Earl in West L.A., another question from him. He said, belated congratulations on your 300th podcast. We really appreciate what you're doing. And he wants to say kudos to Max Wittick. He's going to earn his bachelor's degree and have two more years of eligibility to hone his football skills while earning a master's degree and doing it all on someone else's dime. Which USC quarterback do you think is best suited for Steve Sarkisian's offense today? Cody Kessler and Max Brown can both run, but don't compare it to freshman Jalen Green, who rushed for more than 1,200 yards and scored 14 touchdowns his senior year of high school. The competition should be interesting if the offense is anything like what they had at Washington. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't think running is going to be the primary determinant for the offense. I mean, Keith Price really, he didn't really run that much at Washington, and when he did, he often got bassed up. I mean, they really didn't want him to take off. If you remember 2 years ago in Seattle, when he took off, USC just clocked him. So I don't know that that'll be the difference, but I do think the difference might be in really encouraging. We saw, for example, a couple of times when Cody took off that he can, he's athletic as heck. And he just, I think, was so conscientious about going through all his reads and being very, you know, probably not as encouraged. We thought he was going to be encouraged to run over the summer, but that seemed to be pulled back on. And I think the encouraging, with two quarterbacks who can play, I think there'll be more encouraging them to break the pocket if they have to, and put a little more pressure on the defense. Obviously, you've seen what could happen with UCLA at Arizona State and teams like that, you know, Oregon putting pressure on you. I think just having that threat there is important, and I think that threat will be there. But with the receivers they're going to have and the running backs, I'm not sure you absolutely have to, you know, focus on the quarterback's ability to run the ball. I just think you have to focus on his ability, if things aren't there, to take advantage of what's there and go for it.
Yeah, and Jalen Green, just to let people know, he's you know, from Sarah High School. He's enrolled already. He's an early enrollee, so USC will have three scholarship quarterbacks this spring, although he definitely seems like more of a project. I would not think he's a legitimate contender in the quarterback battle along with Dan.
He better not be. I mean, yeah. And this is nothing against him. He just better not be. That's not the way that you go. But it'll be good to practice against somebody with that kind of athleticism, and it'd be good for him to break in that way. But I think, you know, that's one of the things USC has had to figure out is, you know, what to do with a running quarterback. And I think probably a different answer from last year's answer. And we'll see how that goes. I'd be very interested in. I remember, you know, talking to Clancy, and as great a job as Clancy did in so many ways, in so many things, and got so much right, still remember, you know, talking about the, you know, UCLA game and saying, we're going to stick with our principles. We're going to stay in our running, you know, in our lanes, in our tackling angles, and just keep our basic responsibilities, and I remember thinking, that ain't going to work. I'm sorry. You know, Brett Hundley's too good an athlete to get people in the open field. And you know, go one-on-one, even if you've got somebody kind of responsible. Being kind of responsible for a kid like Brett Hundley is probably not enough. And so it'll be interesting to see how do you handle Taylor Kelly and Brett Hundley, and if you get to the championship game, Marcus Mariota, what do you do? And you got to have an answer. It's a whole different answer from, say, what Denver did to Peyton Manning. It's just a completely in a different place because you can stop everything else, and then a kid like Hundley just takes off, and he's as big and strong as he is and fast, and he's out there one-on-one with anybody, and he's got a big advantage. So we'll be very interested to see how that goes. But I think, you know, having an new athletic quarterback to come in certainly gives you a different look in practice, and I think that's a good thing.
Here's a quick one, and then we're going to do a voicemail question about basketball. But Nick wants to know, and I get people kind of tweeting me this all the time. He says he's a current USA student. Well, welcome, Nick, to the podcast. And he said, is there any updates on whether Morgan Breslin will be able to get a medical redshirt for next year or if he even wants one?
I think probably he doesn't. And secondly, it certainly looks like the best information we got, even though it wasn't the first information we got, was that because USC played 13 games and he played in the seventh game, he played into the second half of the season. Now, there are those who thought by playing in a bowl game and making it to 14 games, USC, he would have only played in the first half of the season in the first seven games. However, from everything we understand now, that's not correct. Bowl games, only scheduled games count. Bowl games didn't count. So USC had a 13-game schedule. If he played past the midway mark, which would be game seven, he wasn't eligible to get a medical red shirt. So I don't think he would have asked for one. I know when I talked to him, he was looking at it. I mean, he was thinking about it. This is at the end of the year. He was thinking, and he hadn't made an absolute decision, but I don't think he was going to go that way. But I guess we don't know exactly how the surgery went and how close he is to being ready for the combine or for pro day or any of that. So, I mean, that can change things. I would think it probably certainly did with Andre Walker, you know, when it's more severe and you aren't absolutely going to have any chance to get ready. But we don't know that with Morgan. But my guess would have been probably not.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he was really looking to come back. And what Dan explained is correct as far as there's an automatic way. If the conference will just say you can't do this, the Pac-12 would not be able to do it because he played in game seven of the 13-game schedule. It's more than halfway. But if there was a real need, if Morgan Breslin really wanted to and USC wanted to bring him back, there's an appeal process they could go through the NCAA. It's just not kind of rubber stamped because of the situation, or the conference can't say, yes, we can take a look at it. The conference can't look at it. You'd have to go through some kind of appeal process as the NCAA. So it's not, if they really wanted to do it, it wouldn't have been completely out of the question. But by rule, it wouldn't be go through the approval process easily because he played in game seven. But if there was some weird circumstances and that you could argue that he only played one snap of this game or whatever, then that's something they could look at as a separate appeal. But it just didn't meet the minimum criteria, I guess you could say, where it could go through or not, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I'm guessing in Indianapolis, the first question when that got to the appeals committee is, let's see now, Morgan Breslin, he plays for who? Oh, yeah, I see.
Yeah. But I think if he really wanted to come back, I think there was an avenue for USC to go through because he really didn't play a lot of snaps in the games he actually played. So it wasn't like
that's
he was out there.
Good point. And I do agree, and they do allow, for an appeal, but you'd really have to want to do it. You have to have a really good reason. And then you realize it's still USC. And I mean, I know the today we find out that Tosh Lavoie got cleared at at Washington in warp speed time, I guess, for the NCAA. So maybe you're better off if you're places like Washington, where the NCAA president just happened to be the last president at the University of Washington. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that helps.
I wouldn't hate to throw that out there, but wow, that was pretty good time to for those of us who are familiar with four-year-long NCAA investigations. Very good job by the Huskies.
Yeah, they went through that one pretty quickly. Well, one last one for you, Dan. This is a basketball question. I'll let you listen to this one.
Hi, this is Richard from Toluca Lake. I'm just wondering if the athletic department has ever thought about bringing back ex-ball players for halftime like they do for football, or having somebody lead them out like they do at football, because the way they're playing at the moment just isn't making it at all. And I was wondering if you think that's a good idea to kind of get a spark, certainly have enough ex-USC ball players that could be introduced at halftime. So just so curious, and would enjoy your comments, certainly enjoy the program. Thanks again, and fight on.
Yeah, it is a really good idea, and they were doing that for a couple of years. I don't think they did it last year, and not certainly I don't think they've done it this year. I haven't seen it, and I don't know that for sure, but not at the games that I've been to. I thought it went over really well. I think people were somewhat amazed, and they would, you know, at the talent level of some of these guys. I don't know if anybody has the Pac-12 network, but they're in the process of doing classic basketball games in the Pac-12, and they're doing the Elite Eight game where USC, I think it was 2001, where they beat Kentucky. And a heck of a game, I guess it was in Philadelphia, really good basketball game, and you realize, man, USC, that team had some talent. And just one, you'd really like to see some of those guys brought back. I think it's a very good idea. I don't know why they discontinued doing it. I think it'd be a good idea. They've done a pretty good job of not so much with the students. The students are still kind of staying away. But the general population in the crowds, it's held up pretty decently. The last game for Stanford, I think it was like 5,300. You know, for a lot of places, that's not great. But that was mostly general population, not so much just a few hundred students. But and I think those people would really appreciate seeing those guys. I think very good idea, and I think I'll bring that up with some of the people that do the promotions and the marketing, and see what happened with the honoring of the former players and coaches.
All right,
good idea.
Yeah, good idea. All right. Well, thanks, Dan, for coming on the show. And again, apologize everyone for being late. I was a little had a travel day for me today, coming in from Las Vegas. I was in Las Vegas for the Super Bowl, so I traveled today. And we'll have Coach Harvey Hyde again next week. And like I said, we'll also have Gerard coming on Tuesday to talk some USC recruiting. But thanks again, Dan, for coming on.
Oh, I enjoyed it very much. Thank you for having me, Ryan. And I was just thinking, for people who wanted a question about the Super Bowl or how much people know, I used to work in Cincinnati with Peter King, and he pretty much got the whole Sports Illustrated preview, Super Bowl preview article that I'm looking at. And one of the headlines is, "It's hard to imagine anything keeping Denver down." That was one of his bullet points going into Sunday's game. It's hard to imagine anything keeping Denver down. That's why sometimes you don't like to predict these games. And I do think the people, some of us who knew Pete and knew how USC played in big games, probably had a different sense about how that game might go than, say, the people who hadn't ever really covered Pete in big games like this.
Certainly. All right. Well, Dan, great stuff again. And everyone else, we're going to be back in a minute here. We're going to talk some USC football recruiting with Chris Swanson, who our newest member of the USCfootball.com team. Stay tuned for that.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source.
We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287, 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concerts, sports, and theater.
We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
We're back here on the Peristyle Podcast. Got a special treat. For the very first time, our newest member of the USCFootball.com team, Chris Swanson, one of our staff writers who covers the USC team, as well as recruiting, is joining us on the show. Hey, Chris, what's going on? How you doing?
Not so much, Ryan. How are you? Thrilled to be here.
Yeah, doing good, and glad to have you on. I wanted to let people – we haven't had you on the podcast. It's the first time, right?
Yes, it is. I was a little jealous whenever I heard Gerard on here. I'm not going to lie. Kind of wanted to get on here and make my mark, you know.
All right, well, you're going to make your mark today. We're joining on the show. It's a little different podcast. We're a little late because I was in Las Vegas, so we kind of put things off. And Gerard's busy working on our USCFootball.com war room, the midweek war room, the pre-signing day war room. So we'll have a prediction thread. We got a whole bunch of cool stuff coming up on USCFootball.com, so you can kind of get to all that. But we wanted to talk some recruiting on the podcast today, and I wanted to get you on because I know you've been down there covering everything that's been going on. And I guess the first thing, Chris, is the 2015, quote-unquote, junior day that the kids came down. It was like an elite little day that came out over the weekend. And what were your initial thoughts coming out of that with the talent that was on campus?
Well, it was a small event, which I think that everyone appreciated in the class. That was the feedback that we got from everyone. In years past, under Lane Kiffin, they tended to go to kind of a bigger format, try to get everyone out that could potentially be, you know, a recruit for them down the line throughout the year, which that strategy makes sense because, you know, sometimes you do have to go after a diamond in the rough type of guy, you know, like Energini Harris from Crenshaw, that, you know, maybe having that junior day and having a lower ranked guy out there might work in that sense where you build that relationship with him. But the criticism about those events always were that it was so big that, you know, you couldn't really get a personal feel with the coaches and with the other prospects. It just kind of felt like a giant get together. So the feedback we got from this event was that, well, first, everyone that got invited was thrilled that they're considered one of USC's top, you know, prospects on their recruiting board, but also that, you know, they were able to talk with the coaches and kind of build a relationship with them, which is important since, you know, they did just come down from Washington a few months ago. And then also, you know, just connecting with the other prospects that were there. It's kind of easier to do that. And they kind of got a sense of what USC wanted out of their class, what they're looking at, you know, because it was probably between 20 and 30 guys. So that's what their class will be. So maybe that's their dream California class. So I kind of gave guys a chance to kind of say, okay, these are the guys that, you know, if USC succeeds in recruiting this year, that they'll have in this class.
And, you know, big news, you know, some offers came out of it, but there was one commitment too.
Okay. Yeah. Cornerback from John Muir High School in Pasadena, Teon Mason. Kind of a more of an under the radar guy in such a loaded class, but you know, the coach told him that kind of looking at him as a safety, actually, I guess, even though he's listed as a cornerback on Rivals.com. He had an offer from Oregon State before, but not very many other ones. He's not rated yet, but he's an athletic guy. He shows a lot of speed on his film. I think that that's what he's looking for, speed in that defensive backfield. And I think that, you know, with their first class of 25, he's a guy that you definitely want to take, especially with some of the problems they've had in the defensive backfield. And our Adam Gorney said that when Rivals.com does the re-rankings, he expects him to be ranked, because currently we don't have a ranking for him. So he expects him to shoot up, I guess, to make a name for himself.
All right. And then, so overall, so that's 2015. I just wanted to kind of get a overview of what was going on with that, which was kind of mixed into this 2014 stuff with official visits and things like that. But the USC class right now, there's five early enrollees. Guys already enrolled, you know, so people know about that. Besides that, there's 10 commitments that USC has, which are this total of 15. The class is going to be 19 guys, which means there's four uncommitted guys kind of left over. And there's the three big ones that everyone's talking about locally. Damian Mama from St. John Bosco, the offensive lineman. Juju Smith, John Smith from Long Beach Poly, the athlete that can play safety and receiver. And then Adoree Jackson from Sarah High School, the athlete that plays running back and receiver and cornerback. And overall, just in general, what do you think about USC's chances of bringing those guys in, from what your perspective has been?
I think they have a decent chance. I think that Adore is obviously a question mark, and I think that John Smith is, although people think that SC is the favorite, there's a chance he could go elsewhere, although I don't think it's as big of a chance as Adore. I think they have a really good chance of Damian Mama, though. He canceled his final visit to BYU, and he eliminated UCLA. So it's not like USC, Alabama, and BYU, but he didn't take that official visit to BYU. So a lot of people are thinking that he's going to stay home and go to SC. I think that's the guy they have the best chance with. John Smith is down to USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Notre Dame. The chatter for a long time, especially after the new staff came in, and he has some relations. He has an uncle on the staff, obviously. Chatter with USC. Then UCLA kind of came back with Kennedy Polamalu. They were kind of nowhere to be with him, be found with him. They kind of came back into it, but I don't think they're the big player really in it. Oregon seems like they're the threat. He was thinking about taking a last minute unofficial visit to Oregon, paying his own way up there. That he told us that wasn't going to happen, but he was strongly considering it. He also apparently said go Ducks at a high school event, which I don't know if you can really what to take from that, but it's something to think about, I guess. And also Notre Dame is in it too, even though it's not the chatter, just because he's always talked about how important the Christian lifestyle is to him and how much he respects their values. So they're a team to think about, but I think it's right now it seems like it's a USC Oregon battle. I think USC is probably the favorite just because he's from the area. He grew up. SC was a big influence in his life. It's a big. His parents are seem like they're SC people. It seems like SC family. So I'd say that's the third. I wouldn't be shocked if he went to Oregon though. Adoree Jackson is kind of the enigma because he had a favorite. Everybody thought that Tennessee was the favorite. And he eliminated them when he made the top four. I don't know. He just seems like he could do anything and really wouldn't be shocked. UCLA is in the top four, and he hasn't paid too much attention to them, hasn't really visited their campus that often. The word was he stopped by quickly this weekend after, of course, being on going to USC with his mother. So that's something interesting right there that he did actually get on USC's campus. So that should make Jordan fans feel pretty good about that. But also Florida and LSU, both teams, people have said that he grew up liking them. SEC teams, he's obviously not worried about going anywhere in the country. His family is obviously from back east, back in Illinois area. So he's the question mark. I think the people starting to think that USC has a good shot just because his mother came in and checked up the school. He was there for that last visit, but I would say that it's got to be a coin flip. Adoree Jackson for USC.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think signing day can be shocking, and there's not a whole lot I think that would shock me with those three guys. I mean, I think, like you said, Damian Mama probably the most likely to end up at USC of the three. I think Juju Smith's a favorite for USC too, but if he did a DeAnthony Thomas and Oregon came in and took him at the last second, I don't think I'd be shocked like I kind of was with DeAnthony Thomas. I think you can kind of see that potentially coming. But Adoree Jackson, really, I mean, if he ended up in Florida or LSU, I wouldn't be shocked. I think the only thing that would shock me, Chris, and maybe disagree with you here, UCLA's listed on all these for all these guys, but I really don't think if these guys don't end up at USC, they go out of state. It just, if any of them went to UCLA, I think that would be the most shocking thing for me.
I agree to you. Obviously, Danny Mama has officially eliminated them. So, yeah, that would be totally shocking. With Smith, he told us, you know, last time we talked to him, which was on Friday, that he grew up disliking UCLA, and they weren't really in it for him until they hired Kennedy Tolomalu. So you got to think that even though, you know, there's a relationship there, that would be an incredible recruiting job if one guy was able to, you know, change, you know, the last few months leading up to that point in recruiting, or maybe even longer for him, because, you know, he's obviously been a focus for teams for years now. And with Jackson, he never really was around UCLA. So, yeah, I agree with you. I would be pretty shocked if UCLA got into any of the top three guys in California. So, yeah, I'd be surprised if any of them went to UCLA.
Now, it's funny with Adoree Jackson. When we talked to him, I talked to him down in Orlando for the Under Armour All-American game. He had a top three of USC, Florida, and LSU, but he said he was going to have a top six. So anyone that was added, you're kind of wondering, like, well, they're obviously on the outside of those top three. And like you said, Tennessee was like this dark horse, and people thought they were the favorite. He eliminates them, but kind of keeps UCLA around. So that's interesting. But to me, it's been about that top three for the last month or so now. But Adoree Jackson's a guy that can, you know, he keeps the cards very close to the vest. So but if he picked any of those three, I don't think I'd be shocked.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't either. And, you know, he's liked LSU and USC, I guess, since he was a kid. So
yeah, and I think Steve Sarkisian's made a good push, and he really changed the perception. I think Sark being hired certainly helped USC's chances for Adoree Jackson. So we'll kind of see what goes on from there. But so assume, Chris, those three guys, there's, like I mentioned, there's four spots left. If someone like Bryce Dixon sticks around, he remains committed. So there really is four spots and not five. Yeah. Or if someone else, you know, decommits, something like that, that would be one left over. The three crown jewels of, you know, California you know, Mama, Smith, and Jackson. Who are your thoughts about maybe that fourth guy, what USC would kind of go after for that fourth spot?
Well, there's five guys that really come to mind that I think also USC is pushing for. If you know, either for that last spot or if they actually have an extra spot if one of those guys goes elsewhere. There's Lamont Simmons, cornerback from Florida, who's originally committed to Rutgers. Opened up his recruitment after, you know, he got some more exposure and people started to realize how talented he was. Seems like now he's considering USC, Georgia Tech, Arkansas, Penn State, and Auburn. He visited USC. We talked to him very briefly. And he mentioned that he'd love to visit to L.A. and it felt like home to him when he was there. I think that's a guy you have to consider just because, you know, there's been problems with the defensive backfield the last couple of years at cornerback. He's a cornerback. That, you know, potentially has that Florida speed. And I think that's someone that SC would really want to bring. And I think they have a good chance with him. He visited. He liked to visit. That's the first guy that really comes to mind. The next guy is Fred Warner, the linebacker from San Marcos, California, that's committed to BYU. He's had an offer for USC for a while, but he committed to BYU really early in the process of April of 2013. Has stuck with that, but he actually did visit USC this past weekend, and it seems like he's interested. If there's a spot open on signing day, who knows, maybe he doesn't go to BYU, but I think that with him, you have to think that BYU is the favorite because he's been committed to them for, you know, so long that it just seems like it doesn't make sense if he flipped up the last minute. Of course, that could happen, but I think SC would definitely take him. He's a great talent. I always felt like he was a little bit underrated just because he was that, you know, committed to BYU. But if SC doesn't get him, they have another linebacker that they're looking at, Drew Lewis, from Salem, Miss Washington. He's committed to Washington, committed there back when Steve Sarkisian and his staff was back at Washington. I think he could potentially flip to USC if he got the offer. He took an official visit. He raved about it. He has a strong relationship with both Keith Hayward and Peter Sermon because actually USC started recruiting him as a safety. So Hayward was recruiting him, but as he kind of grew, he's up to 190 now. But he seems like he's got that linebacker frame. They said, hey, you know, we could see you playing linebacker for us. So Coach Sermon started recruiting him. So he actually has a great relationship with both of them and the entire staff. So he's a guy to look out for. If they have an extra spot on signing day, maybe they offer him, and it becomes a Washington-USC battle. And so just, you know, him obviously going to Washington. And then there's the final two guys. I'm going to get Bobby Johnson out of the way first, because I just talked to him.
Okay.
Right before I came on here. He did not visit USC this past weekend, and he told me he's 100% committed to Fresno State. He's done. There's an update coming for FSBulldogs.com soon on that. It seemed like he was a guy, you know, early on in the process, they didn't feel so confident with Damian Mahmer, maybe a couple other guys. So, you know, maybe back when Vianney Toma-Alva was still committed to Alabama. You know, he seemed like kind of the guy they were looking at for that. Seemed like they filled up. He got it, and he went with Fresno State, and he's not even going to consider USC if they offer him at this point. He's done. He's a Bulldog.
So. Okay.
He's kind of off the table, obviously. So the last guy is Jabril Frazier, the outside linebacker from Bourbon Bay in Los Angeles. He's a really interesting prospect because he's a little bit younger than everybody else in his class, and he seems like he could, you know, potentially fill out, you know, and develop into something, into a really solid pass rusher for, you know, the type of linebackers they need when they're in that 3-4 scheme. He doesn't have an offer either. He's on track to grayshirt, where he would enroll in December for the 2015 class, but as an early enrollee. So he wouldn't count towards the 2015 class anyway, but he'd be able to come in earlier and, you know, develop a little bit, which would be great for him. But he's been told that if they do have an extra spot on signing day, he could get offered and just come in with the 2014 class right away. The other school he's considering right now is Boise State. They have offered him for the 2014 class, no, you know, special accommodations or anything like that. So those are the two schools he's down to. And he's going to decide after signing day, actually.
Oh.
He might be waiting to see if USC has that spot or not. You know, maybe that would make his decision easy if he could just, you know, choose SC and slide into that class right away. So look for him to either choose, he told us, the day after signing day or the following Friday, which I believe is Valentine's Day.
All right. Well, great stuff, Chris, on that. Thanks for the breakdown there. You're going to make Gerard jealous of the stuff going on. Well, we have a couple questions, though. We'll see how you do on these questions here, because they can get a little crazy sometimes. Jason wrote in. He says, what happens if USC gets commitments from kids they didn't expect and then have more than 14 kids looking to sign their letter of intent to USC? How do they handle a situation of telling kids their scholarship is no longer good? Is it a first come, first serve type of thing? That's from Jason.
Well, the interesting thing with these kinds of situations is that the kids usually understand what is going on. Coaches, when they have a situation when they might be full, they're usually pretty upfront about it. And when you have a brand like USC, you can usually say, hey, you know, this is the situation. We might not have room for you, but we might. Like, if you look at, like, a Jabril Frazier or a Drew Lewis, like I mentioned, you know, just earlier, those are two guys that don't have offers and have been told up front, you know, what is going on. And so it's a concern that people always have coming into signing day, but it never seems to materialize because it just doesn't happen. The kids usually understand which schools want them and which schools don't. So I guess that if it did come down to that, though, it would be a first come, first serve kind of thing. But I believe the coaches would get some negative feedback, you know, and from the media for, you know, over-recruiting and leaving some kids out to dry.
All right. Good stuff there. And then the last one's from Eric. He said, this is about the junior day you're talking about. Why would USC invite 2015 recruits and only offer scholarships to some of them while leaving others without a scholarship offer? As a player, my mentality would be, why send an early invite in the first place if I have no scholarship offer? Leaving the unofficial visit without any offer while my friend, colleague, fellow high school competitor received one is very insulting. It would provoke me and make me sign elsewhere. So what's going on with that from Eric?
Well, I think Eric brings up a good point. I think that too, you know, just to expand on this point, even that you got to think about the kids that all the incredibly talented kids in this 2015 class out of California that weren't invited to the event at all. But I guess what it would come down to is really is needs, and you know that you need some kids at certain positions right away. And maybe that's how you sell, you know, to recruits that didn't get an offer. Hey, you know, you're one of the top, you know, players at this position that we're looking at, but we're just, you know, maybe full from the last class, or, you know, we might not need that position as much as these positions, and that's why we're offering these guys over here. You know, there's only an excuse, I guess, that the coaches can find to build in when those kinds of things happen, and you hope that the USC brand is attractive enough that, you know, kids want to play there anyway, even if, you know, they don't feel like they were recognized as early as maybe some of the other schools recognize these kids. You just hope that the USC is able to draw these kids in, and just because of their past history and everything the school has to offer and the location and, you know, everything else.
And I think you brought up a good point too. This event was very limited to, you know, 20-25 guys. Just being invited, this was kind of like being nominated for an Oscar. Just being invited was an honor here. Now, not everyone's going to have a scholarship offer. And sometimes, you know, they talk about they want to see you in person. They might be guys they haven't seen at a camp before. I think there's a lot of different reasons. And I think sometimes a kid will get a chip on his shoulder where he'll go to a camp, you know, the Rising Stars camp this summer. You know, that'll be a good example. There might be, you know, a whole bunch of middle linebackers. And one guy's the one everyone knows, and he's got a scholarship offer. And a kid that's maybe not as well known is like, I think I'm better than him. I'm going to prove myself to the coaches while they're there. So the coaches definitely like to do a lot of in-person evaluation. And that's one of the quote-unquote excuses you can use. You haven't seen them really in person yet. So I think some of these kids are patient on that. But in this event, I think it was such a small, prestigious event. Just being there, I don't think anyone was insulted if they didn't have an offer.
Yeah, it's just you got to worry about those kids that weren't invited, I guess.
Right, yeah. No, I think that's the bigger – that's what you brought up. I think it's the bigger point is there's juniors around that are like, hey, why wasn't I invited to this thing?
Yeah.
I think I'm the best junior, you know, whatever. But, I mean, it's competition, and, you know, coaches can't bring in everyone. You know, USC's getting scholarships back 25, but it's not like they're getting 50. You know, it's significantly more. It's a great – you know, it's coup for – Steve Sarkisian, and I think there's a really talented class of 2015 to choose from, but you got to make some tough choices sometimes.
Yeah, well, I mean, you obviously know from being around it so long, but it seems like every year, even when there aren't scholarship reductions, people go and they see some of these other talented kids that, you know, are committed maybe to UCLA, Arizona State. They don't have a USC offer. They say, wow, you know, that kid's amazing. Like, why haven't we offered it? There is a limit. You have to stop at some point. USC wishes it was different because they would love to take 50 of these kids, I'm sure. But that's the way it is. And other teams are going to be talented, too, at the end of the day. They're going to get some really good kids, too. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Chris, hey, great stuff. Welcome to the podcast. A very good first episode. Hopefully everyone enjoyed it. You can follow him on Twitter at Chris P. Swanson. Is that correct? Chris P. Swanson?
Yes, that's right.
Check him out on Twitter.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it too.
Yeah, give him a follow. He's a good tweeter out there. He's good on the message boards on uscfootball.com, and he's done a lot of updates for us there, and has helped us out a lot. So, Chris, welcome to the team and welcome to the podcast. We'll definitely have to have you on again soon.
All right, thanks so much, Ron. I really appreciate it.
All right, everyone else, thank you very much for tuning into the Peristyle Podcast. Again, apologize for being a little late on this Monday. Stay tuned for another recruiting podcast on Monday. We'll get even more in-depth and get Gerard rant on some of these guys and talk to you more about USC recruiting then. So stay tuned for that on peristylepodcast.com.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.